making learning content, making videos, the one thing to remember is that this is supposed to be fun. We are helping people improve their lives, improve their careers. And that's just like an inspiring thing. And so I get that there's lots of ways that you can worry that it can go wrong, or there's so many things to think about of how do we edit this? How do we make it better quality? At the end of the day, have a good time. Realize that we're working to change people's lives. We have this massive privilege in what we do. And I always just try to remember that and remember to inject a little bit more fun into it.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are and wherever you're watching from. I'm Matt Pierce, host of the Visual Lounge, and today we're going to be looking at a topic I think is really important. If you're in the world of learning development, you might have felt some pressure from YouTube or from the things that people are doing on YouTube. And there's so much we've talked about on the show already about learning from YouTube creators, but we're going to dive a little bit deeper with that perspective on L&D. But if you're a creator, here's the thing. There's going to be great things for you too, because you can learn how to make better how-to videos, which are obviously very popular and important. So let me go ahead and introduce our guest for today, who's going to help me talk through this topic. So Matt Jurtson is a founder of Better Everyday Studios and is on a mission to help companies develop top talent so they can solve tomorrow's problems today. He began his career as an Air Force instructor pilot and then became the manager of training and development for SpaceX. After SpaceX, Matt joined a global technology startup and then founded Better Everyday Studios to help close the new leader skill gap at aerospace and technology companies. With that said, please help me welcome Matt to the Visual Lounge. Hey, Matt, thank you so much for joining me here in the Visual Lounge. I'm glad that you're here.
I'm very excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, Matt, as you know, we like to start with a tip. So what's one tip that you could give our audience about improving how they use videos in the work that they do?
So this might sound super dumb to people. If you've been making videos for any length of time, I apologize. But this was a major lesson for me, is move the light closer. I can't tell you how long I spent trying to figure out lighting that doesn't like create tons of glare. As you can maybe tell, I still haven't fully figured it out. But the one lesson that I have learned is move the light closer if you're trying to get rid of glare.
Yeah. What a great advice. And, you know, I think the other thing I found that goes with that is start lighting in the dark, like don't have all your lights on. And so take that, move it closer, start in the dark, which is, I guess you need some light to see, but so I love it. Well, Matt, you and I have had a chance to talk a little bit because we got to meet at a conference first time. We got to present together, which was a really fun opportunity. And one of the things that we talked a lot about then, and I want to talk about with you today, is kind of how the world of YouTube creators, and my guess is it's more than YouTube. We see this TikTok, Instagram, these kind of all these platforms, but that's kind of swinging, they're moving into kind of the L&D space, even if it's unintentional and they're not, you know, they're probably not talking about those topics. So let's start high level from your perspective, because I know people have heard me talk about this before. What do you think is happening there, and why should L&D folks, learning professional development folks, be interested in that?
Yeah, I mean, this is a topic that I'm really passionate about. Since I started my own YouTube channel a little over a year ago, and my own podcast, I really started thinking about it a lot. And I think the reason why it's important is for a couple of reasons. You know, once you leave, even in school, but especially if you're in learning and in the corporate world, people aren't there to learn. Like, they're there to do something else, and you need to kind of entice them to learn. And so that means that you're competing with all kinds of other potential distractions. And what many of these distractions are the things that are being created by these content creators, right? Like, when we think about how do we get people engaged with our learning, we need to think about what we are competing against for the mind space, right, of our learners. And that competition is the output from all of these content creators. And you're exactly right. It's YouTube, it's TikTok, it's Instagram, it's all kinds of stuff. So understanding your competition is, I think, the first reason you need to be watching it, aware of it, that kind of thing. And then I think the second major reason we need to watch it and we can learn from it is simply the scale, right? It's the scale at which these creators are operating. You know, when you have a platform like YouTube with hundreds of millions, billions of users, with probably millions of different creators, many of whom are, you know, doing this for a living, just the pure iteration and lessons learned and the speed at which they can advance their craft compared to just the learning and development industry, if we only looked at our peers, is incredible. So I think we're both after, at least in part, the same thing. We're after people's attention, right? Before you want to teach people anything, you have to get their attention. That's the same thing that content creators are doing. And since they are operating at just such a more massive scale, it makes sense to look at them for lessons that we can then use, because we're just not able to iterate that.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack here. Let's talk about that scale first. So it does seem like one of the benefits a creator may have is that, especially if they're doing this full time. Now, a lot of people are still, you know, they're still trying to make it hobby. You know, maybe it's just, you know, they're hustling on the side, but it feels like that what they have is the gift of focus, right? They also have the gift of analytics, which most learning teams would die to have the number kind of 100%. Analytics YouTube has. So I guess from a learning perspective on that scaling standpoint, what do you do then? If like you're coming in to consult with me and I've got a team and we're trying to like obviously scale up, it seems like there's 20,000 things that are required from the business and video is one slice of that work. What advice do you give to those teams to say like, hey, here's how you can go faster?
I mean, I think again, you know, kind of like looking at the way you go faster, I think, is by just incorporating the lessons from them rather than learning them yourself. And so, you know, simple lessons that you can learn are, you know, things like titling. We need to stop having videos that are titled Health and Safety 101, right? Because it just sounds boring right from the beginning. So bringing those kinds of lessons learned in is really important. From a pure speed perspective, another lesson that we can learn from the outside is, you know, there are many YouTube creators who are successful because of their lack of editing, right? They just do live streams. That's all they do. And so we need to kind of get rid of, especially around video, I think many people are very hung up on, or are too hung up on quality, especially at the beginning. And so if we can, you know, in terms of, like you said, how can we speed up what we are doing here? We can kind of look at content creators and say, okay, what are the things that don't matter? There's clearly things that do matter. Like I would say sound is one of the things that probably matters the most. Like one of the things that you understand is that really good quality sound is really, really essential. But super crisp editing, super crisp transitions, like sure, they make a difference in like the shorts world, but there's plenty of extremely successful creators that do very minimal editing of their video. So that to me says, oh, okay, we can spend less time on the detailed editing as long as we get it close. If that helps us move forward faster, the better. And then the final lesson in terms of speed, I would say, again, that comes from looking at content creators, is almost every successful content creator gets successful through iteration. They started with a very low bar. There's lots of, you know, YouTube for YouTuber channels out there that say like, look, you just got to hit record, right? Like if you don't hit record, then you're not going anywhere. And so just getting started is a major lesson, I would say.
So I want to first kind of preface this with saying, I agree with exactly what you're saying. How I want to take a little bit of opposing view, because I can imagine that little voice in people's head, right? You're saying like, oh, well, just hit record, just go. That sounds really great. Obviously, maybe don't edit as much. It doesn't have to be perfect. But I think oftentimes inside of organizations, there is this fear, this reticence to say like, oh my gosh, if we don't put out what is really high quality stuff, the rest of the organization is going to be mad at us. And I could see some of the argument of like, well, gosh, if I don't edit this video down, you're stuck with, let's say, 30 minutes. What could have maybe been 8 minutes. And then somebody's paying the cost there, right? Like either on the editing side or the viewing side. So how do organizations help their teams to be able to move forward with this? Because obviously, look, no one wants junk. No one wants to put garbage. We're not saying put garbage out there. But how do you balance that trade-off a little bit so that you can feel good about what you're doing?
I think it's about knowing what to spend your time on, right? This was at least, maybe this isn't other people's challenge, but I know this was my challenge when I first got into learning development and content creation, even outside of video, is I was too fast to jump into the creation piece, right? To actually get into storyline, make the course, or I guess I did say just hit record, but maybe I would hit record too quickly. I think the biggest difference between success and non-success isn't in the things that happen after you hit record. It's in the work that you do before you hit record, right? It's like that old adage, what's the phrase? It's like, if I had 5 hours to cut down a tree, I'd spend 4 hours sharpening the axe. I would say the way to prioritize your time is in focusing on the planning so that you know exactly the reason why you are making this video, the outcome that you want to have from this video, the, you know, whether it's quotes or whatever that you're trying to achieve. If you spend a lot of time doing that, it's going to be much easier to cut a 30-minute video down to 8 minutes. First of all, you're going to get a 14-minute video instead of a 30-minute video to begin with, and then you cut it down to 8, versus having that 30-minute video that's kind of disjointed, that kind of flows from one thing to the other. And the reason why you have to spend so much time editing is because you're taking a chunk from the end and moving it to the beginning because those points really connect, and then, you know, deleting this whole other thing. You know, you're having to kind of figure out the story arc after you've created the content. Whereas if you can spend more time in the beginning, I think that's how you create products. Because I agree with you. It's not about just putting out trash or putting out content to create content. But from what I have seen, the best way to make that transition, to still minimize your efforts, but get as close to good as possible, is by doing it on the front end planning.
Yeah, well, I love that advice. And I think, you know, there's so many adages about the, like, sharpening the axe to cut the tree, or an ounce of prevention is worth the pound of the cure kind of thing, right? Like,
yeah.
So I absolutely agree that, like, you know, that the upfront work makes so much sense, and it's going to really shape what you do. Because, I mean, if you look at film, how much time goes into actually making, we'll take a Hollywood film, right? My understanding is that, like, films take a year or two, you know, Pixar takes 5 years. And most of that time is, you know, in things that are not making the film. Like, the film is like a 6-week shoot. Like, there's six weeks, and then there's lots of editing, but the pre-work that goes into that to make that 6 weeks work is so important. So, Matt, I want to come back around to this idea of, you know, being aware of the competition and thinking about what you're, you know, like, how you're drawing attention. Because I do think this is something we often take for granted inside of organizations, kind of this captive audience mentality. And I've been there, and I do that, right? But I have a sense that there's problems with that, because, again, my headspace is, you know, I could be anywhere, even if I'm present looking at a computer. So what are some of the things you've seen YouTube creators do that help capture that attention really well? Anything that stands out to you?
I mean, as you said, with analytics, right, since they have such good analytics, almost everything that I've seen is, like, there's very clearly a strong emphasis on the beginning of any video, right? Making sure the introduction is really clean. It clearly states why people are there, who should be watching, what they're going to get out of it, maybe gives a little bit of a hook. But from everything that I've seen, and you would probably know this better than I do, but if you can get people through those first, like, 40, 60 seconds, just the retention rate goes up dramatically. And so what I have seen from creators is just their spending. If you have to go back to the, you know, the preparatory example, just using it, setting it in a different kind of setting. If you have an 8-minute video, 80% of your time is maybe spent on that first minute, on making sure that there is that clean introduction. If you're shooting videos out there, maybe the introduction is the one thing that you're scripting, and everything else is more kind of just like discussion based. If you really making sure you're grabbing people's attention right from the beginning, of making it very clear what this video is about, why people should be here, what they're going to get out of it. And then if you can, if it makes sense, building any kind of anticipation along the way. Again, people, you know, this comes straight out of adult learning theory. People want to have control over their learning experience and they want to know what they're getting out of it. And the faster you can show that to them, the better. I mean, we see this clearly, you know, again, to go back to the movie example, if you ever go back and watch a movie from even like the early 2000s or the 90s, or you go back to the 80s or 70s, and as a moviegoer today, you're just baffled of what is happening at the beginning of the movie, right? You're just like, why are we here? Why is this taking so long? And now movies just jump right into it. They get started right of the way. Trailers now have pre-trailers, right? It's not enough to take a movie and cut it down to 2 minutes. You also have to cut it down to like 5 seconds as a pre-trailer to the trailer so that you can grab people's attention. So I just think focusing on that initial hook is really important.
Yeah, I think you're being generous with the 30 to 60 seconds. I think it's, and on YouTube, it's five seconds. Like you got 5 seconds to get attention. Yeah. That's where like, I know, I mean, just from an analytical standpoint, we see like 50%, and it's pretty average drop. Mm-hmm. 50% and the 5 seconds are gone. Nope, this isn't for me. That guy, he said something funny. He didn't say enough. So I love that. And I do think you're right about the older movies. Like my kids will watch movies and they're like, why is this taking so, like, because it's all title cards and like, names and it's like, oh my gosh, what is going happening? On? Why does this matter? Do we care?
Yes.
But the experience was so much different. I love that idea that you're saying, and I'll even add to it that going even before the movie, it's that, like you talked about titles, what's the thing that's going to get somebody to click? And, you know, obviously for YouTube, it's titles, thumbnails being huge, lightly description, but I don't think in your LMS or learning management system, people are thinking that way. They're thinking, well, I'm going to serve this up to Matt and Matt's going to have to watch it, or it'll be in a course catalog. And maybe if he's interested in that title, maybe.
And again, I think a lot of this goes back to the pre-planning in many ways. I tried when I was still working internal to organizations, one of the shifts that I try to make, one of the last things I did at SpaceX was kind of create this big intake system for content. And very often, again, you know, you just jump right in and you start making. And then what almost always happens when you create a course, when you create a video, is you don't really think about the title or the description until you are putting it into the learning management system. And that's where everything goes wrong, because you've put in all this work. It feels like everything's done. And you're like, come on, I'm just going to put it in there. And that's why you just say health and safety 101. You're going to learn about health and safety stuff. Cool. Required for all employees. Submit, done, publish, whatever, and you're done. And so if you can take that and move it to the very beginning, you know, again, this is coming straight out of YouTube creators playbook. I've watched tons of YouTube videos on how to improve your videos. Many people, the process that they have starts with creating the title. What is the title that's going to, you know, or maybe you start with, okay, what's an idea? What's a concept? What's a topic? But then as you narrow it down, what's the title? And then we build to that title. And I found much more success with both titling and descriptions if I wrote that at the very beginning. I got the subject matter expert to help me. This is what this is all going to be about. And so that way you're willing to put the work in, because you're not like right there at the 1 yard line where you just want to be done with it. And you know, you can publish it regardless. But in many ways, you know, you're just missing out on so much additional demand that you can generate if you can put some of that work there. So the hack is, don't do it as your last step. Do it as one of the first steps in the creation process.
Yeah. Well, I think that's really wise, because there's also this narrowing that happens, right? Well, that stuff that doesn't fit in my title and description, you can't add it in now because it doesn't fit. So I think that's really smart. I'll just even add that Mr. Beast, who, for those who don't know, I can't believe no one knows who he is, but, you know, 200 million subscribers on YouTube, very successful, obviously all about the entertainment. He won't make a video if he can't make a good thumbnail.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Like if they can't do something that's going to grab attention, they won't make that video. And so I think there's something, again, really smart about like focusing on that first kind of touch point that your viewer is going to have.
And that's where I think this can expand out to. It's not just about learning from these creators about how to make better videos. I think we can learn from these creators about how to make better learning, period, full stop. Because again, it all goes back to, in order to learn, you need to get people's attention. And the entire game in content creation is how do we get and keep people's attention. So when you're using that frame, you know, that's why micro learning has been the whole craze. And I think normally what goes wrong with micro learning is when people take a hour long course and just make it 15 minutes and call it micro learning, you know, or 5 minutes and call it micro learning, but still cover everything else. Like, no. The point of the micro is in the goal. The goal needs to be micro, right? Like the thing that you're trying to achieve with this video needs to be as micro as the box that you are putting it in. That's what we see, that's what we see with content creators, where it's not that you're trying to take an hour and make it 15 minutes and then take 15 minutes and turn it into 15 seconds. You're figuring out what are the key points here, getting rid of anything else. You're limiting the scope of what you are trying to achieve. That's how you get people's attention so that they want to engage. I think that's how we need to think about our learning engagements as well.
Okay, so this brings up a question for you, Matt, that obviously that attention is super important. One of the things I think that happens, because if you're a creator on YouTube, you've got infinite flexibility, right? The way you approach your topic, the way how you structure it in personality, like you could be, a lot of channels are obviously personality driven.
Yeah.
The question about entertainment always comes up. Like, should I be entertaining learning development? And it's obviously there's a lot of risk with entertainment. So I think from a legal standpoint, from a kind of corporate standpoint, a lot of people just say like, never. But, I'm not saying I disagree with that. I'm curious what your thoughts are, because it does seem like that's something that, I don't want to point, there's lots of people who are making great content that's about learning, and it doesn't necessarily have to be entertaining, but is that something that should be in our toolkit?
I think it can be. I think that's a very cultural question about the culture of your company. Some companies are going to be, if the company in general is very jokey, and I think it's highly unlikely that when you're making learning content, legal is going to come in and say, no, you can't act that way. Maybe they will. For certain content, they will. But I think the important thing is to match the culture of the organization that you are within. For me personally, and this comes back to my personality, is I want to respect the learner by focusing on exactly what we need to focus on, making sure they get in, get the lesson, and get out as fast as possible, right? Like, I see respecting the learner as respecting their time. And that's what is engaging for me. When I go on YouTube, I skip over the videos that's, somebody in a clown suit or doing some crazy funky thing in order to 5 minutes in, give me the lesson. I want the lesson right away. But that's me. That's a personality thing. And so what's the personality of your company? Will they enjoy a little bit more preamble because that's the way you are and everybody's in on the inside joke that you start out with, and the inside joke is your hook that works because that works with your company? Or, it just, by the nature of the environments that I've been in, it was much more likely people wanted to get in and get out. I think it's very important for you to be realistic about, one, understanding your culture, and two, understanding kind of learning's place in that culture and how much people are willing to engage with it. And if we're honest, people aren't usually coming to us for entertainment. If we want to change that, great. You can try to change that. And if everybody's on board with that, go for it. Try to make your department known as creating stuff that is entertaining. But in my experiences, that has usually backfired in that it just ends up taking more time, is less focused, and people would prefer we got to the point. But again, I think that's very situational.
Yeah. Oh, yes, absolutely. And you want to be appropriate about it too. Like, if you're talking about very serious subjects, obviously there's humor that may be inappropriate or just not called for. So one of the things that, as we get kind of close to our time here, we're wrapping up, Matt, I want to ask you about the risks. Because obviously we're talking a lot about the positives. YouTube is like, okay, we look at there and there's a lot of great things, and we kind of talked a little bit about risk of being entertaining and that. Are there other things that when you look at YouTube and YouTube creators, and when you say like, hey, that doesn't really translate to the corporate kind of space that a lot of the people that are listening to this are in. Any flags that go up for you or anything you're like, yeah, that's great for YouTube, but really doesn't work for what we're doing?
I mean, I think the main thing I would say is, again, it goes back to kind of the pace and scale of many YouTube creators. And as you I think said too, like they just have a lot more flexibility to do a lot of tries. And online, people's memories are incredibly short. And that's true in general. But I would say, though, I think we could be much more iterative, lean forward much more, take many more risks. We can't be as risky as online creators. We can't be as iterative as them just by the nature of it. We're not going to get as many at-bats. We're not going to be given as much leeway as they are. You know, even if a content creator could build a small community, destroy it, build a small community, destroy it, build a small community, destroy it, just through like because of their trial and error, and then on the sixth time, figure it out and become a global household brand. And it's not going to matter that they have, you know, five different communities left in their wake. You can't do that unless you want to, you know, try it out, lose your job. Like, it's just not going to work the same way. So we do have to be a little bit more cautious, I would say, in terms of the speed that we go, how far we lean forward, because there's almost no downside to taking those risks if you're a YouTube creator, where there are lots of potential downsides for you and your career and your team.
Yeah. Well, I love that. So always be thoughtful about what you're doing, folks, as you're building these, obviously keep in mind, it sounds like keep in mind corporate culture, keep in mind what your boss wants, keep in mind your audience, all those things. So, well, Matt, this has been awesome conversation so far, but we're not done. We get to go into our speed round, which are fast, quick answers to questions determined by the roll of the die. So got a quick stinger and here we go. All right, so let's go over to our dice cam. Here we go. First question, are you ready?
Yes, let's do it.
This has got to be a piece of cake compared to flying a jet. So question number 9, what's the one thing you're most proud of in your career? You've obviously done a lot of great things with a lot of great organizations. Anything that you're particularly proud of?
Honestly, the thing I am most proud of is some of the individual people that I have been able to help along the way, whether it's there's, you know, individuals that I've gotten to know and then they lost their job and helping them find, you know, because their organization went under or whatever, and helping them find a new job. Specifically, there was a couple of years ago, there was somebody else who had left the military and they were struggling with kind of the military to just civilian transition. And how do I talk to employers? And I just kind of talked them through my experience and helped them with that. Those are the things that I just love, those one-on-one interactions where I can directly see like, this is amazing. I really feel like I helped move this person in a new direction in their life, which I always love.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I love that. But here we go. Question number 2. Like I said, these are fast. And it's a 12, the highest number we can get to. What's your one go-to tool that helps you get your job done on a regular basis? This could be software, it could be physical gear, it could be anything that you consider a tool to help you do your job on that regular basis.
I'll say working out, to be honest with you. If I don't get a good workout in the morning, I'm just kind of wasted for the rest of the day. And so being incredibly consistent with getting some kind of physical activity in the morning is the number one thing that sets me up for being successful for the rest of the day.
I love it. I love it. And great advice, especially for people who, like me, work at a desk all day long. So, all right.
Yeah, me too.
Matt, last question here. Let's see. Number 7. Okay, here we go. What's a hobby or interest that you've always wanted to pursue but haven't had the chance to as of yet?
Oh, there'd be so many. I'm gonna share a really weird one that I don't think I've ever shared before. For some reason, in the back of my mind, I've always wanted to try to learn how to sing opera. I have no idea why, but it's just always been back there. And luckily, it's probably something that I could maybe try when I'm like 65 and don't care about anything anymore.
Now, are you a singer? Do you sing normally?
No.
Okay. So Got some work to do to get to
Got some
goal.
Things to do. Yes.
I love it. Well, hey, that's something to aspire to. And I love it. Matt, thank you so much for spending time with me today. If people want to connect with you, learn more about what you do, maybe even work with you, where could they go?
Number one place is LinkedIn. Please, please, please connect with me there. I'm on there every single day. I'd love to hear from you. Love to have a conversation. Always like and love to get to know more people. And then secondly, definitely check out the Making Better podcast. That's our podcast from Better Everyday Studios. You can find it on our website, bettereverydaystudios.com, or you know, you can look it up on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all those kinds of things.
Fantastic. Well, Matt, we like to wrap up the show with our guests in the same way every time we ask them for their final take. So, Matt, what is your final take for our show today?
Definitely, if you are making learning content, making videos, the one thing to remember is that this is supposed to be fun. We are helping people improve their lives, improve their careers. And that's just like an inspiring thing. And so I get that there's lots of ways that you can worry that it can go wrong, or there's so many things to think about of how do we edit this? How do we make it better quality? At the end of the day, have a good time. Realize that we're working to change people's lives. We have this massive privilege in what we do. And I always just try to remember that and remember to inject a little bit more fun into it.
Perfect. Well, Matt, thanks again for joining me here at the Visual Lounge.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
You bet. All right, everybody. Lessons learned from YouTube creators. Lots of things that you can be doing, especially if you're in learning and development. If you're a YouTube creator, go figure out what the learning people are doing and show us how to do it better. Let's see that. That'd be awesome. But, you know, our show is all about helping people get better. We want you to get better at using video in your day-to-day, in your work, in your opportunities that you have. So, you know, we hope that this is helpful. If you like what you're hearing, give us a thumbs up on any of the channels. Go subscribe to the show wherever you can find it, YouTube or on your favorite podcasting platform. Leave a review. Do all that stuff. Help us know that, hey, this is worth continuing doing. And it gives us a mode of encouragement. You can always email us with any feedback, thoughts, suggestions at thevisuallounge@techsmith.com. Definitely go check out Matt's podcast. Got great stuff over there. So, you know, see what you can do. Continue to learn. And we hope that you take a little time to level up every single day. Thanks, everybody.